This is a podcast from Minute Media.
This podcast is sponsored by The Coldest Water, a company at war with hot. They believe that the coldest things are the best things in life. Built for athletes and high performers, they are famous for creating the coldest water bottles to the coldest pillow to the coldest ice packs. They have even developed the coldest dog bed and dog bowl to keep your furry friends cooler during the hotter months. Get 10% off your first order by using the code CBC at coldest.com. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you from a couple of places on the internet. We're live over on YouTube, the Tube. We're live on Crowncast, the Cast. Or maybe we're coming to you later as a audio podcast, wherever you get your audio podcasts. That is all good. Now, Justin, our third host, is off this week. He's on a hike in Hawaii, and I believe...
Yeah, he's just living his best life, you know?
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about this, but I believe he made a citizen's arrest of Ezra Miller. Is that correct?
Oh, my God. Dude, what are you doing?
Current. It's a little current humor.
Oh, boy.
Too much?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Cool. I don't know.
I don't know what's too much anymore.
Yeah. He is in Hawaii, so it could have happened.
Yeah, it could have happened. I don't know. There's all islands there, but I assume there's bridges between them or something like that. Now, listen, we usually do a little bit here at the top. We always do a very well-scripted bit. And I actually had one. There was one that was sent to us over email, and I figured maybe I could read it to you here on the top of the show. What do you think about that, Pete?
I'm nervous. I'm very nervous.
Okay. Well, this is a, I don't know if it was framed up this way, but like you remember David Letterman, the comedian from back in the day? He used to host a late night TV show.
Yeah.
Remember that? You remember CBS he used page. To do these top 10 lists on his show? You remember that, Pete?
Yes, yeah? I do.
Yes, you remember that. Well, this is Pete's top 10 drinks. Pete's top 10 drinks via David Zika. I'm going to guess from Zika's Viral Comics, one of the Patreon supporters, but unconfirmed as of this time. There's also only 9 drinks on the list. That's what I was feverishly going through before the show, but I figured I could read them off.
That makes sense. If I was going to make a list of 10, I probably would do either less or more.
Well, by the point you've had 9 drinks, you're probably going to forget about the 10th one is what happened here. But let's kick it off with number 9, the number 9 drink on Pete's top 10 drinks, vodka with Mountain Dew. Number 8, vodka with iced tea. Number 7, vodka with literally any beverage you have available. Number 6, vodka with vodka. Mm-hmm. Number 5, vodka with a shot of fuck you guys. A lot of cursing right there at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Number 4, this drink is worth it for the vodka alone.
Well, that's creative. I like that.
Number 3, the vodka wit, which is a vodka, a splash of cheese whiz garnished with a grilled onion. Number 2, the trash compactor, which is a garbage plate blended with vodka.
Oh, man.
And the number 1 drink on the list of Pete's top 10 drinks, of which there are only 9 via David Zika, is the Arrow, which is vodka with, sorry, I ran out of time and couldn't finish the list. There you go.
Well done.
Well done, David.
Yeah.
Great list.
Tip of the hat to you. Thank you. And I am that predictable.
Yes, you are. But good list. Thank you, David, for submitting that. We appreciate it. Very fun. And we have a very fun guest for you this evening that we should probably bring into the stream here. I don't want to spoil it, but it's yet another David in our parade of Davids that's happening in the show. He has a new book through Zoop that is being crowdfunded right now called Imposter Syndrome. You might also know him as the co-creator and current co-writer of Naomi, among other things. David F. Walker, hello!
Welcome!
How you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Very excited to have you here. Before we get questions about Zoop or Imposter Syndrome and everything that you're working on now, I believe Pete wanted to gush for a little bit.
Yeah, I just wanted to Chris Farley out a little bit. And just say, huge fan, thank you for all of your work. Loved your Luke Cage. The Sanford Green is one of my favorite artists. So when you did Power Man and Iron Fist, that was amazing. Bitter Root is just groundbreaking and legendary. And it's been so enjoyable. So thank you very much. I enjoyed your old school Cyborg stuff. I just wanted to say thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. That all being said, is something like this, which is very exciting to kind of to read about as someone who knows your work, is this kind of scarier because you're kind of telling a little bit more of a personal story?
you're talking about imposter syndrome.
Exactly.
No, it's not that scary. I mean, I almost went into the porn industry at one point. So, you know, it's like nothing scares me that much.
I feel like we need to follow up on that last thing that you brought up. Was that as a writer for the porn industry? Or?
Like a director and an editor, as much as that
okay.
can happen. It was, at the end of the day, I'm glad I didn't. I think it probably would have ruined my career, my other career options. But
yeah. Me too. I'm glad I didn't do it. Yeah.
Well, I'll just bring up Barry Sonnenfeld was in porn, and then he went on to do the Addams Family movies and a bunch of other great things. So maybe you can turn back time. And
I don't. Yeah, but I don't think I'm as talented as Barry Sonnenfeld. I think I'm more like, not to knock, say, someone like Ron Jeremy, because I don't want to compare myself to Ron Jeremy either. But like to be the most being the most talented porn star is like, or the most talented person in the porn industry is a lot like being like, you know, the like a third rate serial killer or something, right? Like it's that serial killer nobody's ever heard of. I'm just rambling at this point, so I'll shut up.
To tie it back to the book, I'm sure that particular serial killer would probably have a lot of imposter syndrome, which is something that you're dealing with in this comic that you have on
nice.
Zoom right now.
Yeah, that's a great way to turn it back around. But to answer it's putting stuff out there isn't as nerve-wracking as just crowdfunding in general is. Like some people seem to be cut out more for it, and I'm just this is my fifth crowdfunding campaign, and they don't get any easier. So it feels a lot like algebra classes or calculus. Like it never gets easier. But it's just, it's like, it feels like you're in a popularity contest in high school all over again. Right. Oh, so man. There's that jock who's always going to get the date with the cheerleader over me. So, as far as putting the work out there, you know, the stuff that's in Imposter Syndrome, which is a collection of shorts, like I honestly think it's some of the best work I've ever done. So I'm actually really looking forward to people seeing it. I've been having this conversation a lot because it's, again, it's a collection of shorts. And so the thing people keep saying over and over again is, well, you know, anthologies don't do well in comics. And I'm like, it's not an anthology. It's a collection of shorts. Mm-hmm. It's they're all written by one person. And then there's different artists. What is that? Like, you know, I don't know. So I'm realizing I don't have much patience these days. I think it's the pandemic that's put me there, though. So,
So talk about this, because I do think this is a really interesting project, like you're saying, in terms of being a collection of short stories. Did they start out that way? Were they different ideas that you had jotted down and that ultimately you decided to put together as this collection, or did it start with the collection first?
It's kind of an interesting way it all came about. I'd had the opportunity to work on several shorts. This is like starting in 2018, 2019, a couple opportunities came up, and those can be very challenging to write. In comics, you always have a limited amount of space to begin with, usually 20 to 24 pages. But then if you narrow it down to, say, 6 pages, writing a complete story in 6 pages can be really, really difficult. But I found that I really enjoyed that challenge. And then on top of that, you know, I did a short story for a DC anthology. I did one for Fair Square Comics, another one for Humanoids. I did one for Greg Rucka's The Old Guard. And I, in every instance, I got to work with artists that I normally wouldn't work with, challenge myself as a writer. And so I, like, that was going through my head right at the beginning of the pandemic. And so I had a couple ideas for shorts that were kicking around. I reached out to different artists, and the original plan had been, get these things done in 2020 into 2021 and print up each individual short as their own mini comic. Mm-hmm. And then when we went into 2021 during the convention season, was going to open back up again. I'd be going to all the conventions and I'd have a collection of like six different short, smaller mini comics, right? Because mini comics only sell at conventions. Like if we're going to be 100% honest. But that was sort of the thinking was like, okay, I'll probably do like seven or eight conventions in 2021. And, you know, I'll have these new things and they'll be easy and people can throw them in their backpack and da-da-da-da-da. And then I don't know if you know this, but the convention season never really started in 2021 because
really?
The plague continued on. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh. And so that part of the plan like went in the toilet and then, but it was sitting in the toilet, right? It was sitting there. and then there was this paper shortage and the cost of printing just went through the roof. Mm-hmm. And so it went from sitting in the toilet to just being flushed completely down the toilet. I was pricing the numbers out. This was like mid to late 2021. And it became clear that the cost of printing up, say, we'll just say five mini comics and to do say 200 or 300 of each comic was going to be way more expensive than doing just a single collection.
Yeah.
So from there, it was just like, okay, now it's a question of figuring out what shorts do I have that would work in this collection? Which ones do I feel really strongly about? There at least half of them need to be originals that no one's ever seen before. It was all things like that. Mm-hmm. And from there, it really started to come together. And I would say that this was probably, I can't tell you the exact moment I decided to go from doing these individual books, little mini comics, to one big collection. But it seems to me like it had to be around October or so of last year, September or October, where it was right around the time that New York Comic Con we would have been prepping for, because that's where I really wanted to have these debut at. I love New York Comic Con, and I felt like it would be a really good move. And then of course the show didn't quite happen the way I think they did in New York Comic Con last year, but I can't even remember. So it went from one ridiculous decision to self-publish a bunch of little comics to an equally ludicrous decision of let's just collect everything into one volume.
Okay. Is there a guiding principle behind the stories, or is it really just taking them and putting together and then kind of finding the right order like an album?
No, there's definitely a guiding principle, which is self-hatred, depression, insecurity, neuroses, all of those sort of things. So I jokingly say that, but I didn't realize till I was looking at everything as it was all coming together that there was a sort of a running theme. And my close friends, will say, oh yeah, no, this makes perfect sense. Only you could do a collection of short stories about like, depression and things like that. But there's more to it than just that. But it really, at some point I just realized, the shorts that I was doing were, I guess for lack of a better term, really therapeutic. I mean, I think a lot of times when we do creative things, it's therapeutic to begin with. And it became really obvious to me as I was, as I guess we'll say putting the finishing touches on things. Cause at this point, the book is done, with the exception of, and this is me sort of putting the cart before the horse. I'm assuming we're going to hit the goal, and I've committed to adding an additional story, which the artist, I just handed him the script a couple of days ago. It's only, I think it's 8 pages. It's a true story about the time I met Will Eisner and Harlan Ellison, and how Will Eisner changed my life and Harlan Ellison almost got me arrested. And
That sounds like a great story.
Yes. It's a doozy. And it seems like anyone who's ever met Harlan Ellison or knows anything about him is never quite surprised when I tell them the story, but it can be pretty shocking. And especially because the police were called on him for disturbing the peace. But when they showed up, they came after me. So,
wow. That's,
well, let's talk about Zoop a little bit. We've had people who have stuff on the Zoop platform before, but it does still feel relatively new for people. I think they're familiar with Kickstarter, they're familiar with Indiegogo, but for those who don't know about the platform, it's more curated. Is that correct?
It's definitely more curated, and at this point, it's all comics and comics related. You know, right now there's a campaign for a Rocketeer jigsaw puzzle. So there's some sort of tangential or ancillary comics related stuff. But for the most part, everything that's been on there is comics related. There's a new anthology that went up just yesterday that I can't remember the title of it, but it's a benefit for Ukrainian relief. And it's an anthology, and it already hit its goal. So I don't want to hear none of this crap that people are telling me anthologies don't sell. In fact, I think that the best place for anthologies is in the crowdfunding world and at conventions. Like that's, I still think that there's, and that's the mistake I think a lot of people make, even when they're looking at crowdfunding, is that crowdfunding is, in a lot of ways, is an alternative to the what I guess for lack of a better term we call the mainstream comic world, which involves Diamond and involves getting into retailers and I there's a lot of retailers out there that I love and I know some of them will end up buying Imposter Syndrome and they've been supportive, but it's like if you don't understand as a creator, if you don't understand how the market itself works, you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Well, I'll just mention, sorry, and then Pete, over to you for your question. But I feel like you have a pretty reasonable goal here for people who are looking at the page right now. You're at 3,880 out of 5,500, which is a lot lower and a lot more reasonable than a lot of these crowdfunding campaigns. And you have 17 days to go. So fingers crossed. I feel like you're in a good
position. Yeah, it may be me being, selling myself short, whatever. The reality is that every piece that's in there, except for the new one that's being drawn by my friend Jim Hill, the artists and everybody have all been paid. So it's I paid for it all out of pocket, and I was prepared when I was going to do these as individual mini comics, I was just going to pay for them, those out of pocket. And then again, for people who haven't been really following what's going on in the production world in terms of the cost of paper and the cost of printing, like that price has gone up so drastically that like it no longer makes sense to do it. It used to be like, if I was going to do a small enough print run, it's like, okay, yeah, I can take one paycheck or two paychecks from whatever comic I'm writing for, a bigger publisher, and just funnel that into the cost of printing. But I just don't want to do that. That sucks. So, but so that's the thing. It's not really so much, I'm not looking to, a lot of times when you're doing the crowdfunding, what a lot of people are factoring into their budgets is, okay, how much do I owe my artist, or how much do I owe this or that? And it's like, no, I don't owe anybody any money. This is a budget based on a minimum print run and what shipping those would cost. So, and that's provided the cost of printing doesn't go way up between now and say late May when we go to press.
Yeah. Pete,
something I want to circle back to that you brought up, when you're working with artists, talk a little bit about the process of kind of like, if you wouldn't mind giving us a little peek behind the curtain of like how you approach different projects with different artists. Like, does it change the writing or how you kind of work together with each project, or how do you go about that?
Oh yeah, everything it's different project to project, and one of the cool things about this collection is there are process pages for a lot of the stories. So some of them I include parts of the script, others I will do comparisons because I tend to letter a lot of my own stuff, but I also, and this is one of the things that I reveal in the collection, I will also letter something that I'm not going to be the final letterer on. So I'll get like the pencils or the inks and I'll do a temp lettering pass just to make sure that my script works with what's on the page. Yeah. And so there's one of the stories that's included in there in this collection, which actually was printed somewhere else originally. That story went through tremendous amounts of rewrites before we got to the final process. But each, you know, I sort of approach each thing, each project, each story differently. So even within the context of this collection, there's an artist I work with on two of the stories, a guy named Steve Wilhite, who is, in fact, he's not going to be watching this because he's at his day job right now, right? So I've known Steve Wilhite forever. And right here, I was going through some stuff like this right here is like a sketch of his from 1988.
Wow.
When we met probably in 87 or 88 on the local convention scene, which back then was sort of like a flea market. You know, those old conventions where it's just like a bunch of long boxes. And then there'd be like three really nerdy guys who were like selling sketches. So yeah. I was one of those nerdy guys and Steve was one of those nerdy guys. But we've remained friends for all these years. And I think that he's one of the best storytellers, visual storytellers, really heavily influenced by like Mad Magazine and Vaughn Bodie and people like that. And so we finally got to work together on something. And this was actually the first story that was written in 2020. I gave him the script and a lot of it was just me trying to process through my own depression at the time. This was really early in the pandemic. And that one went so well that we started working on a couple other things. And our second story that's in this collection was written essentially Marvel style. It was me, you know, giving him a breakdown. Okay, this is, you know, here's what the story is about. And here's the basics of what I'd like to see on each page, you know, go for it. And it was, I tried to limit it to like no more than five panels to a page, but I wasn't going into great details, you know, and he just nailed it. And a lot of it was about on that particular project, it was Steve and I really sort of finalizing like what we're like as dance partners, because we do want to do something else. And so he's one of those artists where I feel like I don't have to, like I thumbnail out a lot of stuff. I'll draw these really basic stick figure things. Like I know I never have to give him any of that sort of stuff because he's going to get it. Whereas, and this person will kill me for saying it, Sanford Green is, I think he just does it so he can get a laugh out of it, but he's always asking to see what my little thumbnails look like. And with that, this goes back to our Power Man and Iron Fist days. You know, sometimes I'll write a scene that's fairly complicated, especially like if it's a two-page spread. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm writing it, or even sometimes before I commit it to words, I sketch it all out first to make sure that the page is going to work and the panel sequences are going to work. And then from there, I'll sort of look at the diagram that I did and type everything up and go, okay. And so Sanford is one of the few people who asks to see that sort of stuff. But yeah, every artist is a slightly different relationship. And, you know, for me, it's about trying to get to know the artists that I'm working with, play to their strengths, and try to make it so that they are, it's work, but that they're having fun doing the work. I mean, that's the thing. I've talked to some artists in the past who, you know, they'll complain about what it's like to work with particular writers or whatever. And I just don't ever want to be, if I can help it, I don't ever want to be that writer. But you know, I mean, I know sometimes I'm an unpleasant dickhead to deal with. I mean, I know there's, I can show you the string of text messages just from today between me, Chuck, and Sanford over some Bitterroot stuff where it was like, okay, whenever the three of us get together, it's like, it's never a question of who's going to be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. It's always me. I'm always the bad guy. So then it's a question of which one of them is going to be angry at me and which one's going to be like, you know, on my side. And then it's, we're never all three in agreement. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that feeling.
Yeah, you, Pete, you can relate to being a dick in among three yeah. guys who were talking about. Okay,
exactly.
Yeah, fair. Let's talk about Bitterroot just because you brought that up. So yeah. That obviously is ongoing. There's a lot of stuff going on there, and that story just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Do you feel like that's just something that can go forever? Is there an end point in mind? Where are you guys at with that?
Well, you know, we wrapped up last year. We put out issue 15, which wrapped up that particular story that we were telling, and to be 100% honest, we were all sort of burned out working with each other. Mm-hmm. We needed to take a break. And now we're, you know, probably around September of last year, we really started talking about, okay, what are we going to do next? So Bitterroot had just wrapped and we mm-hmm. already started, what are we going to do next? And again, because the three of us don't get along that well or don't agree on anything, we kept fighting and we're still sort of fighting. But the one thing that we're all on the same page right now is that we need to be doing more Bitterroot. We don't need to create something new. We don't. There was a point where, like, Chuck and Sanford both were talking about wanting to do something potentially for Marvel or DC. And I had talked to DC about some stuff. A couple projects that I thought as a team we'd be good with. Right. And those conversations just never went anywhere. And, you know, like, I wasn't in any hurry to give my best ideas to a publisher that isn't going to adequately compensate me for it. So now we just sort of hit this point where it's like, okay, yeah, there's going to be more Bitterroot, but what's it going to be? Is it going to be a continuation of the story that we've already told with the family members that we introduced? Are we going to introduce all new characters? Are we going to set it in a different era? And how are we going to format it? Because, and by format it, I mean, we had a conversation just last week and, like, Sanford was like, okay, so this next thing we're doing is 15 issues, right? And I was like, no, I was like, I can't work with you guys for 15 issues. I was like, five at the most. And I said, you know, what we did before, we have three volumes of Bitterroot. Each one is volumes one and three are 5 issues, and volume two is 6 issues. One of those being our the equivalent to a summer annual, like they used to do back in the 70s and 80s. And but when you look at, like, the time span in between each of those arcs, it was close to a year in between all of them. And I was like, let's just do the next one we do, let's have it be self-contained, and then we can take a year off, and the retailers aren't going to be mad at us per se, the fans aren't going to be mad at us per se, because they're not waiting. It's not like the end of, you know, the second Matrix movie that ended with "to be continued," and then you get the conclusion and you're like, what, that, like, that was it, this is what I waited for? So the good thing about the Matrix movies was it proved that nobody wants to see movies that end with "to be continued." So,
yeah. I don't know how much you can talk about this, but almost a year ago this time, they announced that there was going to be a Bitterroot movie with Regina King directing. Is that still in process somewhere?
Yeah, it's still in process. You know, everything slowed down, unfortunately, at the beginning of the year. Regina King and her family were dealing with some tragic losses, and so everything was just sort of like, okay, we're just going to allow you and your family time to grieve and do whatever you need to do, and then we can come back to it. And I think we're just now, late spring, early summer, going to be getting into discussions. And there's just, it's, you know, making comics is hard. Making movies is hard, too. I don't know which is more difficult. When it's comics, it's just like, Bitterroot is like three guys fighting, right? There's three guys fighting. And then there's Shelley Bond, who's our editor, who's sort of referee. And then you throw in Hassan, our letterer. You throw in Sophie, our colorist, John Jennings, who curates the back matter. But it's essentially, you know, three people fighting and then another three people that are sort of on the team, right? I can't imagine making like a film that's supposed to be multi-million dollar budget. That's like 300 people fighting, right? And I don't go down, you know, without like flailing. I will bite.
Good for you. Good for you.
So, I sometimes think about that, but I do know that, you know, we're talking to some other screenwriters and just, you know, my attitude is one of, I don't mind waiting as long as what we wait for is worth it. We've right. all seen movies that, you know, when you watch them, you go like, why did you make this? No one sets out to make a bad movie, but yeah. it can happen really quickly. It's like no one sets out to be in a shitty relationship. Right. but they can go south really fast. I've had relationships start on a Friday and by Sunday they're in the toilet. So, yeah.
Well, do you feel like I vaguely remember, and I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong, but Ava DuVernay worked with you and consulted with you on Naomi, right? So do you feel like you're able to take that experiences working or at least providing input to that show and potentially apply it to whatever's going on with Bitterroot?
So with Naomi, I had zero. It was like there was one meeting. It was Brian, myself, had a meeting with Ava and her team. If I remember correctly, Jim Lee was there, and it was sort of us just going, well, you're making the show, have fun. If you have any questions, give us a call. And then like, there was no calls. It was like every couple of weeks of me going, well, hey, they're checking the phone. There's no messages from Ava DuVernay here. So, I guess the show's going okay. It was really, you know, and I knew this even before this whole, both Naomi and Bitterroot and all this, these successes started happening, was that there's, you know, there's the work that you do that's essentially work for hire. So even though Brian, Jamal, and I created Naomi, you know, she's completely original. We created her within this shared universe. And I knew that if anything happened with that character outside of comics, I'd be very limited in what I would be asked to do or whatever. I didn't quite imagine I'd be limited to nothing, you know, but that's fine. And as opposed to Bitterroot, you know, Chuck Sanford and I own it. We have in terms of the film side of things, we have a partner who's actually my business partner. And we do everything that I have going on in Hollywood. My business partner and I run together, right? And so he was, from the very beginning with Bitterroot, you know, he was involved when we were first over, when we were being courted by Sony. And then when Legendary came into the picture, and my business partner is such that, like, I don't want to talk to you. So you need to call him and talk to him because he's good at saying things like, okay, how much are you paying? Whereas I'll be like, oh yeah, I'll do it for free, you know? So it's in that regard, we have, you know, there's more say in what's happening with Bitterroot than there ever was with Naomi. Mm. But I also, I'm of the mind that like, well, this is, you know, this isn't my sport, right? Like it's, I play baseball and you guys are doing like hockey or something over here. You know, there's sticks involved, but they're different sticks completely. And, you know, and my goal is as my career moves forward to be more hands-on involved with some of the things that I create. But there's a lot to be said. There's a lot of cautionary tales if you listen behind the scenes to projects that fell apart in, you know, film and television, in part because the comic creators overstepped their boundaries or felt like that they were entitled to do more, when in reality, sometimes all people want from you as a writer is to shut up. And it's like, well, pay me the money and I will be very, very quiet. And if not, I'll be like my former compadre Joe Casey, who's making some noise the last few days, which deservedly so. I think I don't disagree with anything Joe's saying.
Just real quick, for those listening or watching who aren't aware of this, Joe Casey was the co-creator of America Chavez, who is in Doctor Strange 2. And like you're saying, he's been pretty public about, hey, they weren't paying me enough. They offered me, I think they offered him like a little bit, and he felt like, no, you're doing this insanely multi-million dollar huge movie. Pay me a little bit more money for this. And he's also doing it, I think, to his credit, to try to speak up for other creators in the future, because this seems to be an ongoing issue. Down to at the exact same time, there's been a lot of talk about Asad Ribic's art is being used directly for Thor 4, for Thor Love and Thunder. And it does feel like, yeah, you're using these as direct, like, not just inspiration, but you're putting it directly on the screen. Give the people some money.
Yeah, no, it's and the funny thing is like, there's money to go around. It's just some of you are really greedy, you know. It's like you'll hear, well, there's the producers pool, or there's the executive producers pool, and there's only so much money in it. And it's like, well, right now you've got three people divvying up the loot. How about all three of them take less of a cut so that the people who created this thing can get paid, or just go out and get more money? How about you just do that, right? This is Hollywood. Use some CGI, have you know, Industrial Light and Magic, make some more money, and just send it over this way. So, you know, I don't know Joe very well. We've hung out a few times and worked together on some stuff, but he's absolutely right. And the thing is that there's a lot of younger creators out there who have, you know, this their dream, their childhood dream is to work for Marvel or work for DC. And you think, once you get there, you're like, oh my God, my childhood dream has come true. And usually that dream smacks you in the face really hard, really quickly, with unrealistic deadlines and like crazy notes and a lot of rewrites. And then your book is canceled prematurely. And then 3 years later, there's a Netflix show or there's a Disney Plus show, and all of your friends are like, hey, I watched that. And there's some stuff there. That line of dialogue in episode 3 was right out of your comic. And it's like, yep. And then they go, you know, hey, can you loan me some money? And it's like, well, yo, bro, I was about to ask you, cause rent's almost due and you know, the check ain't here yet. So,
and I have to subscribe to Disney Plus as well,
yes,
because
exactly.
They didn't give me a free subscription or anything.
No, nothing like that. Like, that's the thing. It's like, where's my free subscription? At this point, there should be a free subscription to both HBO Max, which is owned by Warner Brothers, and Disney Plus, which is, you know, owns Marvel. Nope, nothing like that. You know, so there's sometimes it, I'm not going to name names, but there's some creators I'll talk to and I'll be like, hey, have you watched? There seems to be two camps. There's the people that are like, I refuse to get Disney Plus because Marvel owes me money. And then there's the people that are like, I refuse to get HBO Max because DC owes me money. I'm right now, I'm more in the, I refuse to get HBO Max because, but that's,
well,
that's
to that note, I did want to ask you, and not to put you on the spot, but given it seems like you had a kind of a weird experience, have you watched Naomi at all? Or does it feel too raw in terms of this is your baby on screen?
I haven't watched all the episodes. I did watch the first few, and I went in going in at with everything. Like, okay, yeah, this is going to be a TV show. Brian, Jamal, and I—we made a comic, and a comic is a comic, and it's its own thing. And you know, let's see what they do for, you know, in how do they honor what we've done, and do they make something entertaining? And you know, I watched a few episodes. I think Casey Waffle, who plays Naomi, I think she's great. I do, and this is, you know, I don't, there's no easy way to say this. Like, I am not the demographic for this show, right? I remember watching like maybe the second or third episode and calling up one of my best friends who's got teenagers, and I was like, dude, teenagers really dress like this? Because these clothes just seem ridiculous. And he was like, yeah, no, my daughter dresses just like this. I was like, oh, my God. So it's difficult for me to look at it because I am so close to the material. And it's like, oh, yeah, this isn't for me. But I want to be very clear when I say this. Like, I saw the most recent Spider-Man movie. And I felt that way watching that too. There was some fun stuff in it, but I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm out of this demographic. I've been out of this demographic for a really long time. And so it's one of those, it's the reason why I didn't get that excited for, I mean, I think I stopped getting truly excited for any superhero sort of movies or anything. I think Winter Soldier might've been the last one that I felt like I was excited about. Right. Mm-hmm. And now it's just kind of like, and they don't, and here's the thing. They don't give us a chance to get excited because they're every other week. Right. Yeah. We get one, you know, I remember when the most excited you could get was because there was a new episode of Incredible Hulk. And I was like, okay, so Bill Bixby is going to be working in a car wash. and the car wash owner's son is in a gang, and then the next episode he's, you know, a park ranger, whatever the hell it was. So
well, that all said, you Brian and Jamal are doing Naomi season 2, the comic book, at DC, which has been great, and just really bringing her back to basics and pushing her forward. So I think we're 2 issues in, at least that we've seen out so far. Without getting into spoilers necessarily, what's the overall idea? Where do you want to push Naomi? Where do you want to take her in comic book form?
Well, because I'm petty and full of spite, I said, let's make sure we go in a direction very different than what they're doing on TV. And let's make sure we do things that they're never going to have the budget to do on TV. Right. and the thing is, it's really interesting is that, you know, the show went into development and production before the second season of the comic had, you know, kicked in. And it's clear when you watch the show that they're going in their own direction. They're doing their own thing. And again, I haven't watched every episode yet, but so I don't know how far they're going. But it's like, you know, Naomi's got on the show, she's got the, you know, like the Scooby-Doo gang or whatever, the Riverdale gang that she hangs out with. I don't say that to belittle the cast because they're all doing a good job, but she ain't got that in the comics. Right. Mm-hmm. And even though in the comics we've established that she's, you know, officially a member of the Justice League and officially a member of Young Justice, it's like, that's not a guarantee that any of those characters are going to be there to help her out in where she's going in this second season. And, you know, Brian, Jamal and I talked, you know, we knew going in, even before we got the green light, that I'd said I wasn't going to work on it if both of them weren't there. Right. And so we all sort of had this unofficial, it's not like we cut our fingers and, you know, mixed our blood together or anything like that, but we thought about it, but Jamal's all the way in Toronto, so
it's hard to do that over Zoom.
It is, yeah. It's, and then you get the blood; it dries up on the camera lens, and it's bad. But I went into this with the, you know, being very clear with Brian and Jamal, saying, "Well, you know, this will be my last time working with the two of you on this character because I don't plan on doing more work for DC after I'm done with this." And I can't speak for both of them. I don't know exactly. Well, I do know what's happening with Brian. I don't know what's really going on with Jamal, but the three of us were like, let's make this one count as much as we can. Let's make this be really special because one of two things is going to happen after we're gone. Either they'll hand Naomi over to other creators who will do whatever the hell they want with her, or they'll put her, you know, in a box and try to forget about her. And like the success of the show will ultimately dictate what happens to her on, you know, in comics. And of course there's other things that will factor in, but you know, when if you're going to be honest and really talk about this industry for what it is, the life that Miles Morales has now over at Marvel is, you know, obviously Brian and Sarah Pichelli and then David Marquez did some great comics. But if it hadn't been for Into the Spider-Verse, Marvel, they were looking for some place to bury the body of Miles Morales for a very long time, right? You know, there was some changing of the guard behind the scenes, but I can tell you for a fact that there were people at Marvel at one point or another who had their fingers crossed that Into the Spider-Verse would tank because they didn't want to deal with Miles Morales, right? And whatever their reasons were, I don't know, I don't care. And that's the thing. If that movie hadn't done well, we would not be seeing all this Miles Morales stuff that's out there right now. And so, you know, if Naomi doesn't last beyond two seasons or so, one or two seasons, I don't know what'll happen to her in comics. It'll be like, you know, I'll be 70 and I'll be getting a call and there'll be some young creator. It's like, oh, they're bringing Naomi out of, you know, they're dusting her off. Just like, you know, what Mark Russell and I think it was Stephen Byrne did with the Wonder Twins, right? Like they a couple of years ago, they did the Wonder Twins for Wonder Comics and it was an amazing, so amazing. I'm convinced that the live action Wonder Twins show that is being done because that show or that comic was so good. So, it's not like there was like 10 hardcore Wonder Twins fans that were going, God, I wish I had a live action Wonder Twins show.
That's true.
Well, I'll just say I've been really enjoying this. I mean, the way that we've been talking about it, and I think we've reviewed the first two issues on our Stack podcast, but obviously the first series that you guys wrote with Naomi created the character, cemented her, pushed her forward, gave her this whole arc, and this is nothing against what Brian has been doing with her in Justice League, but character-wise, it's felt kind of even, like she's there and she's continued. And even in these first two issues, it's getting to exactly what you're saying. It's really putting her through the paces already, really pushing her forward into really interesting places.
That's great.
Kudos, and it's exciting to see where she's potentially going forward.
Yeah, it's been really fun, but it's also funny because, you know, I'm sort of the dark lord, the bitter, cynical one. So Brian sometimes has to reel me back in. And Jamal is more than halfway done drawing issue 5, and then issue 6, which is the final issue. It's being written as we speak, and there's, you know, it's. Left to my own devices, everyone would be dead at the end, right? That'd be like my, not because I want to kill off the characters, but because I feel like I don't want anyone else touching them, you know? And Naomi deserves better. The cast deserves better. And the fans deserve better. And one of the things that I'm constantly keeping in mind is that my whatever issues I may have with the publisher and their parent organizations and all that sort of stuff. And I'll be vocal about it publicly or somewhat vocal about it, but I'm not going to let that stop me from making the best comic I can make or being part of a team that makes the best comics. Like because sometimes I can look at stuff and go, oh yeah, these people really aren't happy right now. You know, somebody higher up the food chain screwed them over. And like, I don't want to read comics that read as being as spiteful and bitter as I am as a person, right? Mm-hmm. It's sometimes you have to work to get that out of your system.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to wherever it's going and glad that probably Naomi isn't going to die at the end.
She is not going to die. Yeah. She is going to be Brian and I have talked. We talked about this so much. Like, we really wanted her to be the most powerhouse character. I think that's the name they're giving her on the TV show is Powerhouse. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there was some stuff that was supposed to go into what's now the second arc, but some of it went into parts of Justice League and Young Justice. But I had this whole thing where I was like, I wanted her to knock Superman out, I wanted her to punch, accidentally punch him, but in the process knock him out, and have everybody be like, "Oh my God, this teenage girl just knocked out," and knocked out Superman. And so when Brian was working with her in these other books, I just kept saying, "Please put that in there. Please put that in there." And I know him well enough to know that he probably tried. And somebody probably put a stop to it, because it was sort of like, oh, we can't have her be more powerful than Superman. But that was my thing. I was like, that's the stamp I want to leave behind. And I wanted it to be like 30 years down the road, she'd be like, oh, and there's that. She'd be embarrassed. It'd be that party story. They'd be at the Justice League reunion. Superman be an old man, and he'd be like, "Remember that time you knocked me out?" And she'd be like, "Oh no, don't talk about it." But didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, David, before we let you go, just to review, Naomi season 2, as we've just been talking about, is out right now, currently running from DC. You got Bitterroot is seemingly coming back, which is awesome. And most importantly, Zoop's Imposter Syndrome, or Imposter Syndrome on Zoop.gg, is up right now. Anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
No, you know, I just want everybody to be nice to each other. And just because we can officially stop wearing masks doesn't necessarily mean we should stop wearing them. I really need to go to conventions for a while, right? Yeah. And so I'll be wearing masks at conventions, you know? I've been talking about this a lot, and this is one of the things I talk to other creators about. There's this, a lot of creators get caught in the trap of, if they don't have something out every month, they're worried the fans will forget about them. They're worried the retailers will forget about them. And they put themselves into positions a lot of times working on things they don't necessarily want to, or they don't have the full bandwidth to commit. I've got 4 projects coming out over the next 2.5 years that haven't been revealed yet. And then 2 series that will probably be out before this year begins, before this year ends. None of which I can talk about, right? Which is kind of frustrating to me, and it's frustrating to you. But it's like, so I tell people, just keep your eyes and ears open, because when the announcements come, they'll be really exciting. But you know, it's, and I say this mostly, I guess, to fans and to readers, is like, don't assume just because your favorite writer or your favorite artist isn't doing something all the time that they aren't actually doing something all the time. Right.
Right.
And I do believe that the comics industry, we're going to see a bigger shift more towards, less towards monthly floppies. And people have been saying that for a long time. I say that now, looking at the cost of paper, the cost of printing, all that, I think there's going to be a shift. And there comes a point where it's just like, yeah, who wants to write a monthly comic? They're not. It's not as fun. A month ain't that long when you really think about it. Like, trying to write a monthly book can be a pain in the ass. So I do have some interesting stuff coming out. There's going to be, I just saw the character designs for one of them. That's going to be later this year. And then there's another one that's going to shock the hell out of everybody. And it's a work for hire gig. It's a character that with a long legacy. And when they approached me about it, I was like, really? You want me to write this character? And they were like, yes. And I was like, you know, I'm going to fuck some shit up. That's what I said. They were like,
well, that is exciting.
So, I'm hoping that one's going to be announced within the next month or two, because there is that kind of, it's like, I love to ignore the positive attention more than I love to ignore the negative attention. And I really ignore the negative stuff, but I always know when something good happened in the news to me, because there's like 5 key people that will start blowing up my phone. And it's like, oh, I haven't heard from this person in 3 years since, you know, we signed Ryan Coogler to produce Black Panther. And so, yeah, it's all going to be good, you know. And just imposter syndrome, it'll be like hanging out with me without having to hang out with me, which I think is a good thing. So,
cool. Well, awesome. I've enjoyed hanging out with you so far.
Yeah, thanks for hanging with us.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right.
Yeah.
See ya.
All right. Once again, the project is called Imposter Ooh. Syndrome, or David F. Walker's Imposter Syndrome. It's over on zoop.gg right now. Almost funded as of this taping. 17 days left. Definitely check it out. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And the page is, there's a lot of different levels you can get in on. There's also a tip jar just because the guy's working his butt off. So, you know, it's pretty cool. Definitely worth checking out. And it's personal. So it'll definitely be a good way to kind of hang out with him and get to know him more, as he had said.
This podcast is sponsored by The Coldest Water. Get 10% off your first order by using code CBC at coldest.com. This week's episode is sponsored by the Online Warriors podcast, a nerd culture show airing every Wednesday, discussing the latest in pop culture and gaming news. The hosts are three best friends who met in college and started the show as a means to keep in touch, but it quickly grew into a five-year hobby with a fantastic community of listeners. Every week, they cover some of the top nerdy news stories, dissecting the news and occasionally giving some hot takes. Then, they dive into a hands-on segment where they chat about the latest games they've played, movies they've watched, and books they've read. Finally, they cap it all off with a year-long trivia competition, and every week's a new topic. Occasionally, they'll even have some guests on for an interview, including BAFTA award-winning composers, professors in game design, actors, game devs, and more. The Online Warriors podcast can be found on all your favorite podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and even YouTube. For all the links and latest episodes, head over to www.onlinewarriorspodcast.com. Absolutely. And now we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question over in the YouTube comments or in Ask a Question over here on Crowdcast. See a couple of those in there already. First of all, though, Pete, check in with you based on our top 10.
What's you drinking, buddy?
Yeah, what you drinking? What you drinking?
Well, it's vodka, you know that much, but it's also a little mango juice and a little seltzer.
Oh, my. You're paying tribute to our friend Justin over in the mango capital of the world, Hawaii.
Sure. I don't know if it's that, but okay.
I don't know. I am drinking a Tierra del Fuego, which Ooh. Is the drink that was curated this week at patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have the Slack. We talk about a drink for the show every week. And this one, it is basically like a Negroni. It's Campari. It is mezcal, tequila, and also, oh my God, Ancho Reyes, which is a chili liquor, as well as a bunch of bitters in it. And it is so good. Great cocktail. And
do you have to use one of those giant ice cubes in there, or can you just
put you got to have either a giant square or giant circular ice cube. Okay. Either way. Otherwise, it doesn't taste the same. I'm sorry, Pete.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yes. Well, why don't we move to the questions? We got one from Ben the Border Collar here. Speaking of imposter syndrome, today I interviewed at a posh private liberal arts college. Is there a time when you felt like an imposter?
Man, all the time. Mm-hmm. Geez, I'm trying to think of a specific. Do you got one? Give me a little time.
Yeah,
here.
Also all the time. I mean, yeah. I think more people feel imposter syndrome than you think. There's a pretty famous story. I'm forgetting the specifics, but Neil Gaiman even told one where he was at a convention. I think he was winning a Nebula or something like that. And somebody was like, oh man, I'm having really severe imposter syndrome being next to you and talking to you. And he was like, I feel it with everybody here at the same time. So I think everybody feels it at all points. And frankly, if you're not feeling it, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Oh,
you're
the real imposter. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss, man. You know, like, yeah, I definitely, all the time. But I was trying to think of a very specific story, but nothing's coming to mind.
No, I think I'll tell you actually a specific story. This is the first one that comes to mind. This is a long time ago, but back when I was doing sketch comedy regularly, I remember I was on break from something. I'll get to what I was on break from in a second, but I read an article. I saw an article pop up that this group, Old English, who was performing at the same time and was sort of like peers with my sketch comedy group, had gotten a TV show, that they had gotten mm-hmm. hired for a TV show. And I sat there and like, I could feel my heart drop. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so bummed out. I can't believe they got that. They're like the same kind of level as us. And they're doing so much better. And then I remembered I was on set. We had gotten hired along with two other sketch comedy groups to have sketches directed by John Landis. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting off stage to go and be directed by him. I was like, oh, actually, I guess we're doing okay, too.
Yeah, but you seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, but there you go. But also, they're awesome, and Old English was awesome.
So. I think back when I was doing stand-up a lot, I know that, like, when, like, big-time comedians would kind of come in or be on the same show that you were doing, I would always kind of, like, freak out and not know what to do. And I remember there was this one show where it was, like, I don't know how it happened, but it was, like, me, Judy Gold, and then, like, another comedian who was, like, really an upper echelon were just kind of in a booth. And I was like, man, I don't belong here. So I would just kind of, like, they would say something about the biz, and I would just be like, yeah, oh, man, I know what you're talking about. You know, it just got to a point where the other guy just kind of looked at me and was like, you know, you can leave. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. I tried to hang, but I made it worse every time I opened my mouth. And it was just like one of those things. It was like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, but you can't stop. You can't stop at this point.
Once you kind of start falling. Yeah, it's
absolutely. This is a question over on YouTube. Nelson Martinez says, are you guys fans of the Sin City movies comics? I really liked the first movie and interested in checking out the comics. Pete, you a Sin City fan?
Well, what I love about Sin City is it's, for me, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is the case for everybody, but it was really the first time that I saw coloring.
Saw myself on screen.
No, saw coloring kind of really help tell the story, highlight certain things. The shading can do that, the tone of things, but the way they kind of like spotlight characters in the comic books to kind of like really draw your eye to me was such a cool artistic kind of thing that I kind of was like, oh, this is such an awesome way to do this. You're just kind of highlighting this guy's red chucks. Like that's his whole personality that makes him cool. Mm-hmm. Like it was just kind of a cool, interesting way to use color that didn't make sense, but really helped with the story. And I was always kind of very moved by that.
I would say I was never a huge fan of Sin City, either the movie or the comics. I appreciate what you're saying, and I appreciate it in terms of stylistically what they were trying to do. But I remember very specifically when the movie came out, I had not read any Frank Miller stuff. And so I picked up Sin City and I was like, oh, this is not my thing. This is very extreme and violent and intense and serious. And actually, I think I'd read Dark Knight Returns at that point, which I liked better. But I went backwards through Frank Miller's stuff until I got to his Daredevil run. And Daredevil was the thing that sold me on Frank Miller. Because specifically, if you go back and read his Daredevil run, you can see him developing his style over the course of it. Like his first issue, he's drawing in very typical Marvel style with not a lot of his flourishes. And it's literally issue by issue. You can see him like pushing into that Frank Miller we know so well. So if I would say from my perspective, certainly check out Sin City because like it's a part of comic book history. But if you want to read like the commensurate Frank Miller, in my opinion, check out his run on Daredevil because that's legit good. And it's just impressive to see him develop over the course of that. So there you go. Edward Dory says you can see his style devolve in Sin City. I think that's probably a good way to put it, unfortunately. Kevin over here on Crowdcast says, what comic book character would you be most interested to see in a otherwise nonfiction format, e.g. a newscast or talk show? Hmm. I assume this is inspired by the news that Squirrel Girl has her own call-in talk show podcast right now.
Well, I mean, that fits the character, and that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it exists, so there you go.
Yeah, I feel like if Cypher had a talk show, that would really be annoying and very dull. Mm. You know, like listening to someone who went to Cornell speak. You know what I mean?
All right, buddy.
Come on.
Deadpool could probably do a good podcast. I think that would probably be good, right?
Or talk show. I would love to see him do like a Maury type talk show. You know what I mean?
I'd love to see Wolverine try to do like a local newscast, just very ill-fitting
grunting
suit jacket.
Yeah, ill-fitting suit. And just
cat. It's very itchy, clearly on him.
And then he would get angry about the news and like storm off halfway through. It would be great.
Have him do the weather specifically. all right, here's another one. This is from Edward Doherty. What superhero TV show is the best example of a TV show not an adaptation of a comic? I'll throw one out at you. Legion, I think, is a great example of that, that has almost nothing to do with the comic book. Super stylish TV show. Absolutely gorgeous to look at. Absolutely awesome. And only touches on it in a very tangential way occasionally, but completely works as a TV show. Pete, you got an answer there?
Well, I want to say Doom Patrol, just because it's so creative and does a lot of, interesting things as far as the TV show and genre wise. I feel like that's the good news is they're starting every kind of show that comes out now. They're trying to do different things with it. With the Marvel shows pushing in different directions and with the kind of like everything doesn't have to be darker and grittier. There are different ways you can go. You can try to make things bright. You can, there's just a lot of different creative things happening right now, which is exciting. So there's a lot of different platforms for things. So there's room for more voices and for more style. So
All right, why don't we move on then to Pablo DeMartinez's question here. What do you think of Warner Brothers Discovery wanting to do changes to DC? This was a report in, I want to say, The Hollywood Reporter, but it might have been Deadline. I'm not 100% sure. But Warner Brothers and Discovery have merged, or I believe it's called an acquisition or whatever. Discovery is essentially in charge now. And they reportedly are looking at the TDC division and feel like it's not as strong as it could be from the film and TV perspective in particular, though it'll probably trickle down and impact comics. I think when this news came out, myself and literally everybody else, so I won't call myself special there, was like, oh, this story again? Because this happens every single time there's a change in management. They're like, well, we should really, really find our Kevin Feige and make it more like Marvel. And every time, from my opinion, Kevin Feige is Kevin Feige. He is a once-in-a-generation talent in terms of ushering this stuff together. Marvel and the MCU is lightning in a bottle, and you're just not going to capture it. And to be perfectly frank, this year before they started shuffling everything around and there were changes with the company, I felt like it was the first time in a while where I was like, great, do all these different movies that aren't connected to each other, that aren't connected to the TV show. I don't have to check out all of them. There's no obligation. I probably will anyway, but like, I thought The Batman was great. Aquaman 2 would probably be stupid fun. there's Shazam. I didn't like the first Shazam, but maybe I'll check out the second one. But like Peacemaker was great. And that came off of Suicide Squad, which wasn't connected to really exactly anything else. So like, just go in any sort of direction and it's fine. So from my mind, it's kind of a bummer that they're like, let's really bring it all in line and come up with this big plan, because they've tried that 3 or 4 times and it hasn't worked.
No, I think what they need to do is look at the projects that are really doing well. And you'll notice that they're kind of their own thing. Like the Harley Quinn animated series is great because it's taking characters we've seen 1,000 times and putting them a new comedy twist on them. And that's the best Bane I've ever seen in my life. I would love to see more of that Bane. So like there's all these opportunities and all these kind of like great characters that they can do stuff with. It's just finding the right creative team. But each thing should be its own instead of it trying to be all connected or kind of like, Marvelized or whatever. So I think they just need to believe in the product a little bit and get the right people behind it. They're going to be all right.
I think it's more about the right advertising or something behind it, because I'm right there with you with the projects. Love Harley Quinn, love Doom Patrol, like we've been talking about, love a lot of these other projects, Peacemaker, etc. But what they want from the business perspective is they want
Snickers ads. They want Snickers, full page Snickers ads right in the middle of the
half page Snickers ad, left, right. You know, we got to go with that. That's a very old reference at this point. No, what they want is $1 billion box office every time out of the gate guaranteed, like Marvel projects. That's what they want. And they're not getting that. Like, that's what they're asking for. And you can't force that. You can't inorganically force that. Like, I think the most successful DC movie at this point, if I remember correctly, is Aquaman, which was a ludicrous surprise for everybody. And that's because, even though I didn't like that movie, that was lightning in a bottle for people, you know? So
I think the Batman did better than Aquaman.
Not yet. It hasn't surpassed it yet. Yeah, I know. Well, pandemic times also.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
But I think, I don't know, they'll figure it out. They'll keep jamming movies down our throats until we die.
That's Aquaman was crazy stupid fun, though.
Was it? This is from Stanley over on YouTube. Any plans for future live shows? Have you ever had live shows at cons? I think.
Yeah, we sure shit did. Where were you? Huh?
Okay, calm down.
We were doing it for years.
Stanley,
man. All right, listen. We've been doing tons of shows at conventions back when there was conventions. And yes, we would like to be able to do those again. But hey, you know, this pandemic keeps flaring up. People are, you know, I mean, that would be great. It would be live shows. Oh man, come on. I haven't been on stage in years.
Yeah, that would be nice. Someday. But yeah, we don't know about future live shows. But yes, we have done a lot of shows at cons. We've talked about them here on the show before, but we did stuff at New York Comic Con. We did stuff at San Diego Comic Con. We did stuff at other Comic Cons. So it's always very fun to do that. And I would love to do that in the future, but it needs to be safe. So we'll see what happens. Last question here. This is from Jolene. I think it's already finished filming, but do you think WB will say or do anything about yet more Ezra Miller issues popping up? So if you didn't read the news today, we joked about this at the beginning, but Ezra Miller was once again arrested in Hawaii. They apparently had a meeting to discuss Ezra Miller's future with WB, which affects the Fantastic Beasts movies, as well as the Flash movie that's ostensibly supposed to come out next year. To be perfectly honest with you, and, you know, I'm no media pundit or anything like that, I think they're just going to barrel ahead with the Flash and everything. It's already filmed, so it's going to come out. They just won't put him in the junkets or hope that it all blows over, you know?
Yeah.
Put them, excuse me.
I mean, I like a lot of fans, think this is a perfect time to just slide in the TV Flash and act like he was there the whole time. Because
isn't that
that's my
mean
Flash
to do
anyway
to Grant Gustin, though? Grant Gustin is almost at the back door. Like, he's off doing his
dog. Yeah, but he's
doing his firefighter dog movies on Netflix. And
have you seen it?
No.
I want to watch it.
I don't know. But he's off doing his own thing. He's moved on to his next thing. Just let the guy go.
I hate it when there's a...
No, the dog lives. Don't worry about it. I just feel like... Jolene says, I'm pretty sure Grant Gustin would take that movie money. Of course he would. But just, like, let the guy be free. Let him move on with his life. He's done eight seasons.
He's great at it. I'm sorry that we want him to keep doing a job that he's great at. I mean...
I guess. I don't know. If they... Tell you what. They got like a year until the Flash movie comes out. If they really want to reshoot all of those scenes with Grant Gustin,
just put his head. Just his head. They don't
I'm all for it, man.
Just CG his head.
They
in
can
there.
Do it with Jeff Garlin on the Goldbergs. They can do the same thing with Grant Gustin in the Flash movie. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but all right.
Wow, to an obscure a reference for you. And that is it for your audience questions. All right, folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics Online. There was talk that we had somebody for this. Are we going to scrap that?
The person who was going to do it is not here. So if anybody wants to raise their hand or say me and get $25 to Midtown Comics, just let us know in the comments here and we will bring you into the stream. Easy way to make money. If we don't get a volunteer, I'll
easy
compete.
Way.
Ooh, we got Kevin with a hand up. Or Michael Tillman. Two. Which one are you going to choose, Pete?
Well, I mean, Kevin was first hand up guy, and I feel like he has a puppet prepared. But we haven't heard from Tillman in a while, so maybe we should go. We should let Kevin, you know, like he's done it a bunch. Like,
all right, we'll bring in Kevin next week, maybe?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to bring Michael in. Sorry, Kevin. Second hand up guy, changing up the formula.
Man, Kevin, I'm sorry.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Spread, Justin's off and you go rogue.
I'm just trying to spread the love around. I'm sorry.
Hey, Michael, hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. How are y'all?
All right. Good.
All right. So today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Gilbert Gottfried, R.I.P. Affleck. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Okay, here we go. Question number one. Daniel Warren Johnson has a comic coming out for DC called blank. Is it A, the Jurassic League, B, Cyborg's Metal Phase, or is it C, Lita Ford? So it's either A, or you could pick B.
I'm gonna go A.
A is correct, and I just found out about this, and I'm very excited. More DWJ, you know what I mean? All right, here we go. Question number two. Who is going to be the new ruler of Planet Hulk? Is it A, Loki, B, Monolith, or is it C, Jerry Stiller? So it's either A, Loki, don't pick it, or it's B, Monolith.
It's Monolith B.
Yes, you are correct. Yeah. New ruler of Planet Hulk sounds exciting. Okay, last one. Who is launching 9 new original comic book series? Is it A, Marvel, B, IDW, or is it C, Christy Swanson? Hmm. So it's either A, Marvel, tempting but don't do it, or it's B, IDW.
Or maybe C, Christy Swanson.
Did we not read comic books that Christy Swanson wrote them?
Sure, but she is not, told everybody that she's coming out with new 9 original comic book series. So.
I'll go with B, IDW.
You are correct.
All right. Congratulations.
$25.
Awesome.
Yes, just shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we will get you your $25 gift card. Now, do you have an idea for the secret movie that Pete is teasing in his third answers?
Could you remind me the
sure, I don't know how you can forget, but okay. Lita Ford, Jerry Stiller, and Christy Swanson. And of course, because we're giving a shout out to the legend Gilbert Gottfried, he's in this as well.
I don't know this one.
Well, it's too bad. You should check it out. It's the 1991 hit Highway to Hell, where Gilbert plays Hitler.
Oh. Weird, weird turn at the end there. Michael, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Thanks, have a good night.
Yeah, take care. Great seeing you.
Wow. Great, Pete. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day, unless you're DC Comics, in which case they're out right now. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, man, there's a lot of great stuff coming out. And I would just like to take this time to thank you, Alex, for bringing Wolverine back into the stack so that I could say Wolverine number 20, I'm very excited about, as well as Nightwing number 91 and Catwoman Lonely City number 3.
I am excited for the Vampire Slayer number 1 from Boom Studios. That is,
of course you are.
It's written by Sarah Gailey, who wrote the last Buffy the Laughest Vampire Slayer, which we liked a lot. It was like old woman Buffy, so I'm very curious to see what she does with the main continuity thing. We're going to be talking about all of those titles in our Stack podcast, which pops up Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. We want to thank David F. Walker for coming on. Check out Imposter Syndrome, which is live on Zoop right now. Also, next week, we're going to have a big show for you. Nick Patera is going to be here to talk about his new project, Axe Wielder John. Also, Mark Bernardin, hot off of his stint on Late Night with Steph Myers, is finally stepping it up and coming on our show.
All right.
Talking about Adora and The Distance, so that should be a lot of fun. Couple of other things to plug on our end. The Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast,
Doom
is officially going live weekly on Thursdays. But if you want access to all 34 episodes, you can do that right now. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is weekly right now. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is recapping Moon Knight. There's a new episode going up later tonight, so check that out. As mentioned, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support all these podcasts we do. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Sorry, Kevin. Take care, everybody. Till next time. Justin, come back to Hawaii.